Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Three Women, Three Ways. We're the show that talks about current events, women's issues, violence against women, all sorts of issues, and we look at it from three different perspectives. We are three women, and we're fortunate to have a guest with us today, but first let me introduce Deborah Adams. Deborah, tell us about yourself and how you came to the
show.
Good
morning, everybody. I'm excited for our show today. I live in Southwest Washington. My tagline is, I have lived it, I've studied it, and I've worked it, and I'm talking about domestic violence specifically, but that has grown to encompass all types of violence. And I currently am a grandmother to eight, and I have two sons and two son-in-laws and three grandsons. So this is, sports has always been an important part of our lives. So I'm excited to have this conversation.
Good. And then with me is Pinkley and Connie Sue. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. Good morning, ladies, and good morning, guests. I can't wait to get into our conversation, so I'll make my introduction a little bit short. I have been away for a few weeks, but I'm back on the air, and I'm excited to be here. I am in the middle of Washington State in the Thurston County area, and currently am in the anti-violence field, working with domestic violence and sexual assault issues, and am a survivor of domestic violence and fled my home in 1997, and thus came the symbolic image of pink because I left all my flowers behind that were all pink. So spiritually, I have grown into a wonderful, strong pink lady. So, okay, there you go.
Thank you. And briefly, I'm Heather Stark. I'm currently working on a PhD in organizational psychology. My master's degree is a focus on domestic violence. I became interested in these issues about 15 years ago, and interest has grown tremendously, as has Deborah's, and so right now I am focusing on the academics while I finish that PhD. Now we got through those preliminaries, and now let's get to the meat of the show, because we are talking about athletics and violence against women, and we have an expert with us who is Jason DeStefano, and he is a Washington State teacher and coach, very interested in the field of violence against women. And Jason, I'll let you give more information about your background, if you would.
Well, I'm very happy to be on the show this morning. It's an important issue. And so I would jump at the chance when you asked me, Heather. My background briefly, I came into this kind of by happenstance, really. About 8 years ago, I ran into a fairly famous major college coach at a conference, Bobby Bowden, who's the retired coach at Florida State. And I asked him how have kids changed over the last 50 years you've been coaching? And he, without a blink, he said, kids haven't changed, parents have. And I started thinking about that about 8 years ago. Over the course of the last 20 years, I've taught in high school, from special education, self-contained, to regular ed. I've taught in small college. I've been a coach in high school, small college. I've had the opportunity to be at major college level. And so I've been around young people at an awful lot of different places in different settings. And I started to notice some things a long time ago and never quite put it so succinctly as that. Coach Bowden did. And that got me thinking a little bit more about some of the issues that we're facing as a society, and some of the people with the best platforms to affect change. And that's kind of where this all started.
Good. And we're very happy that you are interested in this field. I did a little bit of homework, Jason, and here are some names that, because I'm not a huge sports fan, I may not know exactly who all these people are, but I suspect that you will. LaMichael James, Leroy Hill, Cedric Wilson, James Harrison, Jason Kidd, Sean Merriman, Kwame Harris, Dez Bryant, Larry Johnson, Chris Rainey, Lawrence Phillips, Albert Bell, Brian Gillis, or Giles, Tito Ortiz. These are all professional athletes who have been arrested for domestic violence. That's quite a list, and of course it's just a partial list. Brought up the question of who are these people? Are these just anomalies in the field? Are these people who have a sense of privilege to do whatever they want? Who are these people, and why are they abusing women? Do you have any thoughts about that, Jason?
Oh, gosh, I have a lot. I suspect it's kind of a combination of a lot of things. I suspect, and this is just a suspicion and a presumption based on other things, but I think they are representative of the society as a whole. I think they are in the news because they are respect to Charles Barkley, but they are role models. They are noticed. People see them because of their platform and what they do. And when they foul up, it's noticeable. I suspected that domestic violence and dating violence and violence in general happen at a very high rate amongst the general population as well. I think that's a part of it. I think overall the issues that they have at the level they're at, having been at major college sports for a brief period of time, that lifestyle that, and all that it involves leads to a distorted sense of self-importance to even the most grounded people. Right or wrong, good or bad, that's part and parcel to that level where the money is so great and the privilege is so great.
Jason, this is Deborah, and I raised two sons who are very involved in sports, and what I learned when they were in high school, their football coach had actually agreed to be part of a study. And so I invited all the parents to some meetings, and it was around athletes and use of power-enhancing drugs, steroids. And so what I learned from that research group was that even without the use of steroids or any other types of enhancing drugs, that young men through puberty, that their testosterone level increases so much, and that alone can sort of, I don't know how to say it, but initiates kind of that fluctuating really quickly from okay to high level of anger and lashing out and violence. Do you have any thoughts on that subject?
Actually, it's a subject I'm pretty familiar with. Among other things, I'm a certified strength conditioning coach, and my master's research was on performance-enhancing aids. So it's something that
okay.
I'm pretty well read in.
Yeah, you know that.
So we found the right guy.
Without a doubt, I think that age and the genetics of the hormones affect aggression. I think they affect not only physical development, but kind of a hyper-emotional state.
Right.
With any teenager, I think, I've seen if you want instability in emotion, spend some time with teenagers.
Yes.
They're all over the map. And I think with young boys, again, it's a complicated issue. You've got some growth things going on physiologically. You've got some chemical things going on physiologically. Then you have the possibility of outside chemical things going on.
Mm-hmm.
You also have the the influence of our society today, which is much more complicated than it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago. There are a lot more influences influencing young people, their opinions, their ideas, and their attitudes now than there used to be. And unfortunately, many of them aren't very positive.
Especially with
regard to how women are treated.
Well, and I mean, I witnessed a father in that meeting say, "Oh, I'm making sure my son has protein because he's going to play in the pros." And his son was a larger boy compared to others. And that boy was actually at my house, you know, just as a friend of my son's. And I came home one day. He's standing in the middle of my living room, which he pretty much took up all the space, holding my youngest son by the belt loop of his jeans up in the air. And I was like, "Hey, what is going on here? Put that kid down," you know. And so he did, and he was not, I mean, that kind of stopped that incident. But I just, you know, it's amazing to me what a big impact of social and cultural expectations of either parents or family and then society in general has on our teens as well.
Along with that comes that whole social status that athletes get. You know, we kind of expect them to be aggressive and, you know, hyper-masculine and, you know, have adrenaline and all that kind of stuff. You know, we expect that of these young men and women, and we encourage it. We give them a certain social status because of it. It almost becomes accepted behavior until it goes too far. And even then, you know, there are pretty much a lack of repercussions against, except the most egregious cases of domestic violence when it comes to athletes. Pretty weak punishments there is for the general population as well. But, boy, you know, you hear some of this stuff that these young men are doing, and then they get, you know, like no jail time, or they get, you know, 3 days in jail or something like that. And it's like, whoa, you know, are you guys taking this seriously or not? Go ahead, Jason.
I have to say, I've been very fortunate in my own life, having two very hardworking parents at home, very successful professionals who made it very important to make their children important and spend time with them and influence the way they think and their attitudes. That extended onto my athletic career as a player. Coaches all the way through used their platform, I would say, to enhance the young people they were with. It wasn't until I got to college and played for a unique man who just passed away, actually, Frosty Westring at Pacific Lutheran University, who really got me thinking about the way we compete in the way, not only in life, but in athletics, and sort of reevaluating what it means in aggression, what it means in competitive attitudes. And while there, I met the woman who was very renowned in her own profession as a sports psychologist, Dr. Colleen Hacker, who works with the women's national soccer team, amongst other groups and athletic teams, who again got me thinking about how to evaluate our attitudes in sport, not only from a concept of ethics and fair play, but from a concept of how to compete. And it really dawned on me at that time as a college athlete, sports don't in and of themselves build character, build ethics, build a moral compass. Sports simply provide a vehicle for a coach, a leader, a teacher to then teach those things. And I think there's a transition. It's kind of a weird time right now because you have coaches who are doing a tremendous job in teaching these things, and then you have coaches who are horrific at it. Very famously in the Northeast, a couple of weeks ago lost his job in men's basketball. There are some horrific things going on, and then there are some really tremendous things going on in terms of teaching young people how to compete, how to use that adrenaline, that aggressive nature in a productive, positive way. And there are a few places that are actually addressing more than just simple consequence, lack of consequence on how to treat women. There are a few places doing exceptional work in that area. Unfortunately, that's not the norm yet.
And we don't hear about that, right? Because that's not as exciting.
Well,
or as sensational.
News can be salacious. You know, it's very sensational. It's very, it's almost, I've noticed it anecdotally, is almost tabloid aspect.
Yes.
If there aren't any juicy details, it's not deemed newsworthy, I think, which is unfortunate.
Well,
right.
I see that we have a caller, Deborah. Shall we, Jason, are you ready to take a question?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'll do my best.
Okay, let's see. The callers are always a big surprise to us because we don't have a screener. So let's see what our caller has
Heather,
to say, Deborah.
Heather, this is Pinkley. Actually, I'm chatting with our caller right now, and they're listening in. They don't have any questions right now, but we're communicating through chat.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Right.
Yeah.
If you'd like to join our chat room, please do so. You can do that through our website. Deborah, you want to quote that website, please?
Oh, yes. If you go to our show page, which is blogtalkradio.com/3women3ways, and if you scroll down to the bottom of our page, you'll see you'll have the ability to sign into our chat room. And you could also call in, as we've noted. The number to call in is 646-378-0430.
Thank you.
Okay.
Jason, this is
Pinkley. I have a question for you. You initially were talking about a question that you raised about what's changed initially at the very beginning of your introduction,
mm-hmm.
and you mentioned something about it's not the kids that have changed, but the parents, and you said that
mm-hmm.
got you to thinking a lot about and so could you expand on that a little bit and
sure,
tell us a little bit?
Sure.
I'm really interested in that statement.
There is a I actually started to notice it when I was at the college level recruiting. But it seemed like, and initially it was kind of an anecdotal kind of deal, that, you know, a lot of the young men we're recruiting are from single-parent homes. And at the point where I was at that time, a great many of them had no father in their life for whatever reason. They had no contact with their dad. And I kind of just made a note of it and went along, you know. And as time went on, it became an increasingly larger number. And then I started thinking about my own experience and how busy my own parents, but specifically my dad was as an executive, and how hard he worked to make me important and spend time with me and influence me, coaching my youth sports teams, even though he was out of town an awful lot. No matter what happened, he made it work. And was never, ever, that I can recall, not there for me. And I remembered what a strong influence that was in not only how I thought at the time and what I thought of at the time, but now as an adult with a family of my own, influenced how I'm raising my own children. And I noticed that young people today, or the young men we're recruiting, didn't have that. And I kind of think part of it, and I think there's a bit of a neglect going on with our young people in society today. some of it is, you know, some of the kids that we recruited, some of the young men we recruited, had single moms at home that did an unbelievable job. Were just mm-hmm. fanatical parents. Did a tremendous job. Very concerned, very involved, much like I had my own. And some just were working too many jobs to be that involved with what was going on day to day. Some just had too much going on to make ends meet, to really spend time influencing how their young men were thinking. And some, you know, I think like the population at large, were kind of out to lunch doing other things. And I think there's a, you see this, and I started to connect the dots. And again, this is all sort of just anecdotal stuff that I've noticed from being around young kids and older kids. Some of these horrific things that are going on, this rape case out of Steubenville, Ohio, with the football players. There was another one recently
talked about
publicized.
That, Jason, in a previous show, so our listeners should be familiar with that. Yeah.
But the need not only to get involved in such an activity, but the need to put that on the internet. It's almost a look at me, notice me kind of phenomena now. And it's not just with that stuff. You know, there are, most of the time, you could find young people today, if they're gathered, they're looking on their phones, their smartphones, and they're looking at online fights or backyard fights. They're looking at YouTube. It's all about, hey, look what I can do. Look at, notice me. Somebody notice me.
Exactly.
And it's stemming from somewhere. I can't, you know, some parents are doing a great job, and I want to applaud them. But there's a bigger issue here, and there's a lot of young people falling through the cracks.
Well, Jason, it also, even with really great parents and good family support and foundation, teens still are extremely influenced by peer pressure, don't you agree? And so if there's someone who is in sort of that celebrated status as a student athlete, well, regardless of their background, they are looked at and they are followed and they are mimicked. And so I do think I agree with you 100% about parents having a great and enormous responsibility for that. But we still can't discount that, because I know my teens, when they went away from my house, even though I knew I raised them right, they still would make decisions that were with the flow of the kids that they were hanging with.
Oh, most definitely. And I don't want to discount that at all. I kind of, maybe I didn't do a very good job saying in the beginning, it's a complicated issue. There are a number of factors that go into what's happening and why it's happening. I can tell you that a number of years ago, some people noticed the same things I did.
Right.
And I think the coaches, the American Football Coaches Association, about 5 years ago, really started to put some money and some weight to teaching or educating their membership on how to address these issues. And they, for lack of a better term, they talk about it as social issues and solutions. And I think there's a book, Heather, that I sent you some information on. It just came out this past winter. It's titled A Coach's Influence Beyond the Game. Mm-hmm. And it was given to all who attended the American Football Coaches Association convention this year, free. But they discuss the social issues, which can be very overwhelming. They discuss what they are, what their membership, they kind of pulled their membership and said, what are you dealing with? What are you seeing in your high schools, in your junior highs, in your colleges, and what do you need help with? And they came up with a number of issues, and one of them was the peer pressure issue.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a, if I could kind of go over the areas, that the biggest areas that people reported having trouble dealing with were issues of the home, and we discussed some of those. Peer pressure, issues of entitlement, accountability, responsibility, okay. respect, and overall character or who you are at your base level. Mm-hmm. And these issues are from shortfalls in what kids are coming out or coming into these teams with. Some of them are challenges that coaches just don't know how to address. And so there are some groups that are really trying to educate coaches on how to use their platform to help young people.
Well, ESPN came out with an article a couple of months ago, and I really thought that what they said, it just really rang a bell with me. The author of the article said that it seems athletic culture has made disrespecting and hurting women acceptable. How do
you
feel about that statement?
I think that's kind of a loaded statement. I think that's fairly, I don't know, I didn't see the article. I don't know that I agree with that.
Okay.
Based on the different levels that I have been around, the individual coaches that I have been around, the competitive arenas that I've been around, not just football, but other sports as well. I think there's a certain portion of the people in the culture that do that. I don't know that I feel good about generalizing sport as breeding that kind of attitude.
Certainly that's
there.
An unintended consequence, though. Would you agree with that, Jason? That maybe that was not where sports was meant to go, but it is an unintended consequence of our current social norms and expectations that that if you are good in sports, it's understandable to a degree that you'll have these episodes off the field or whatever that is. What do you think about that?
I think at one point, I think you can say that's true. I think at some point, I think now, probably in the last 3-4 years, it's becoming more and more evident that we're talking about human beings here.
Yes.
What's right for this person? What's right? What's the right way to treat human beings? And I can tell you without hesitation that the coaches I know at major college levels, and I bounced around, I know a few, from the SEC to the Big Ten to the Pac-12 to, all the way down to small college and so forth.
Yeah.
There are many, many guys out there whose mantra is, treat everyone, regardless of gender, station in life, with dignity and respect, because that's what you do with human beings.
Right. It would be unfair to paint all coaches and all administrative personnel in the sports arena as at responsibility for the current level of violence against women. I definitely agree with that. Jason, are you familiar with the program? Because I've been doing this work a long time. There's an organization called Futures Without Violence, and in 2001 they launched an awareness campaign that has morphed into leadership and development correction, but it's called Coaching Boys into Men, and its purpose is to equip athletic coaches with strategies, scenarios, and resources needed to build attitudes and behaviors that prevent relationship abuse, harassment, and sexual assault.
I am, as a matter of fact. The Florida High School Florida Interscholastic Athletic Association uses that model to educate within their different athletic programs. That's one of the unique things that I found looking around the country at what are high schools doing to address issues. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, that was pretty amazing that a high school athletic association would take on an edgy and somewhat controversial issue like that and grab hold of it and really look at what can we do to help.
Well, that's great.
I don't know of any programs in the Northwest or West Coast that are using it as an educational model, but I know that's there.
Good.
That's good news, and we were also getting a lot of press recently about professional sports, really, and especially some certain players. I know Dallas was involved. The Dallas mayor got the certain football players from Dallas to jump on board his campaign of anti-violence against women. There have been a number of athletes who on their own have spoken out against violence against women. So it is an area in which people seem to be becoming a little bit more aware and seem to be doing something. However, there have been athletes who have been part of the anti-violence movement who are still arrested for domestic violence. I'm kind of flipping through papers here. There was one in particular, I guess, was it Manny Rodriguez? I'm not sure. I'll let you know the name as soon as I encounter it here on my notes. But he was actually involved in an anti-violence against women movement when he was arrested for domestic violence. So, you know, it's like just because people are talking about it, it's not necessarily an automatic cure. One of the things that I find a little bit disturbing is that there is research that shows that, for example, in 2005, athletes who were arrested for domestic violence were convicted at a rate of about 38%. And when they were convicted, the punishments were very, very light compared to the general population. In the general population, there's about a 75% conviction rate. Again, penalties can be pretty light, but is there something about our social structure? We talked before at the beginning of the show about how society elevates these athletes to the point where they can expect a lot of empowerment, a lot of privilege, and looks like the legal system is doing that a little bit as well. Are you familiar at all with the punishments that these guys?
I understand a little bit of it. My dealings more in terms of college athletes and juvenile justice specifically, but I don't know that athletes specifically to other famous folks, other folks in the media an awful lot. I think anytime you have publicity and money, you're able to maneuver the legal system to benefit yourself.
Yeah.
I don't think that's specific to violence against women. I think, no matter what the offense, if you are famous, if you're a pop culture icon, and if you have money, you can very easily manipulate the legal system.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a personal opinion just based on observation and reading the tabloids.
Yeah. Well, we see celebrities getting away with all sorts of behaviors that the normal person shouldn't get rid of or couldn't get away with. But I am a little concerned that dealing with violence against women, although there are these other things that have come up and these issues, these programs that have come up, we still tend to marginalize that. We tend to kind of pander to that jock culture that says that women are kind of an accessory. And I know I'm being wildly, wildly general here, but that's how I see it as a non-sport person. Do you have comments on that?
I think there's a certain amount of the population, and there's certainly sports has fostered the concept of machismo and you're the tough, rough kind of man's man who, sort of the James Bond of sports kind of thing. You know, I think I would be foolish to say that didn't exist. It does. I think to a lesser extent now than it has in the past. I think there are, because of these groups and the outreach, and because some of the things that are happening are just so reprehensible. You know, there's two ways to look at it, really, and I'm conflicted myself about it. But publicizing these things can bring light into the dark room,
mm-hmm.
saying, hey, we have a problem here. But publicizing these things also lends itself to desensitizing people about them. When you're inundated with this stuff, it becomes almost a new norm.
You
and that's not
desensitized.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Desensitized.
So it's kind of a double-edged sword. If you're,
yeah.
you know, you can bring light to it and say, you know, we've got a problem here. We have to do something about. But when it becomes, you know, an everyday occurrence, people are like, you know, it kind of loses its effect. Yeah. Does that make any sense at all?
Yes. I think definitely we do get desensitized, Deborah.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, Jason, from your perspective, your study on strength conditioning and your experience with younger athletes, so when and how can we work with our young people? Because, you know, following the Steubenville, it's like the young men who were the charged and convicted were like, we didn't know we were doing anything wrong. And I'm wondering how and when should we start? How do we make sure they know that they were doing something wrong before they do it? Do you hear what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I think because of the nature of this, anytime you're dealing with sex or sexual orientation or I think drugs, the feeling is backed off a little bit. But it's seen as very, very edgy by school districts and by school boards. And they're very, very nervous about getting involved in these issues
mm-hmm.
to the point where they won't. But if you're asking my opinion based on my experience, I think it's junior high is not too early.
Yeah.
I think junior high you need to start addressing and using a standard curriculum like what's offered with the Coach's Corner stuff in the playbook. I think you can start introducing it that way at the junior high level. At the, I think some of these youth leagues, and I think now there's a phenomenon that school sports are almost shifting to down and club sport is almost shifting up.
As far as level of violence?
No, popularity.
Popularity.
That's a whole other probably show topic, but
yeah, probably.
I think the junior high level, middle school level, that platform, because that's when they start really getting into the internet, really getting into the peer culture. And right now, nobody else is offering another opinion. That makes sense?
Yeah.
I'm so amazed at these boys at the age, were they 17? They were still 17,
mm-hmm.
not adults, that they could actually publicly get up and say, I did not know what I did was wrong. And so I'm wondering where that disconnect is. Is that what they truly believed? Or is that something that maybe someone said, if you say that, it won't seem as bad?
Well, I can give you a personal opinion.
Yeah, let's hear that.
And that's all it is. But without somebody specifically addressing it early in life, i.e. parents, in my opinion, a dad saying, hey, this is what it means to be a man. This is what it means to be a man. This is how you treat people. This is how you treat women. This is how you treat children, the elderly. This is how you treat human beings.
Yeah.
Without somebody saying it over and over and over again, the media and the video games and the music and all the other things, the internet is can be a wonderful thing. It can be a horrific thing because it allows access to things that kids 20 years ago never would have thought of.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they're so inundated, they're desensitized, it must be okay. Because I see it and hear about it every day.
I was going to say, Jason, I think this is Pinkley. I think as adults, we also are becoming very desensitized and just overwhelmed by the media's barrage of violence just socially. And then it's becoming, maybe even as adults, we shut down and don't have the coping mechanisms to teach our kids something different.
We can look at just this current horrific act of terrorism, domestic terrorism that just happened at the Boston Marathon, right? How much time yesterday were all the TVs glued to the event of apprehending the second alleged perpetrator in that crime? I think it was nonstop on all the major channels. You know, we didn't used to be exposed to this sort of information when I was a child, and neither were the adults. But now that it's almost like 24 hours nonstop, minute by minute, blow by blow, step by step, we had to. We didn't have to. We could shut our TVs off, but very often people don't, right? So it's just this constant focus on negativity, violence, all these, negative experiences. I think that's unfortunate.
You know, I have to say I agree with you. I also have to say I'm guilty as charged. I found myself yesterday on a treadmill at a health club watching the same thing you did until I got to the point where I was – made myself crazy, and I had to flip to the golf channel. I mean,
you made yourself even crazier.
and maybe partly the issue or the concern that we should probably share or think about is, as adults, we have the mechanisms or the tools to go, okay, I've had enough. We have an ability, hopefully, some more than others, to regulate ourselves, but as children and youth, I don't think that that's yet been really something that they've learned to do. I mean, you're not expected as a child to be able to completely self-regulate or to say, wow, this isn't what I need to be doing right now. So as adults, we need to be the leaders and the teachers of that and really go back to communication as opposed to letting social media drive how we see the world and is our lens. I mean, what happened to old-fashioned communication? And I think that that's something that we don't do a lot of anymore. Even as adults, we've come to the place of, we don't have phone conversations anymore or even write letters. It's all by text. So in some context, you're actually losing some of that human compassion that you were, that treating people as human beings, as you were mentioning earlier, when you lose that bonding and that ability to have communication, I think that there's some real issues and questions that we should be asking ourselves around that. Is that being a socially acceptable norm? And obviously it's becoming that way.
As a grandmother, I feel a strong sense of responsibility to have really deep conversations with my grandchildren because of what Jason described earlier about how parents are so busy, making the money to support the family that requires sometimes two and maybe both parents two jobs. So it's incredibly important for the extended family to be supportive and helpful as well, I think. And So I have conversations with my my grandchildren. I talk to them about Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and I talk to them about bullying, and I talk to them about racism, and I definitely talk to them about violence against women, since that's my work. Most people don't do that, and I think that's unfortunate that we keep our conversations sort of superficial.
Well, see, I think that it goes even deeper than just having a conversation. I think that, you know, I mean, I hate to use that values word, but I remember my kids are in their 20s, and when your kids are little, mothers are always saying, you know, or parents are always saying, what do you want your kid to be? You know, how do you envision them in the future? And I would always say, I want them to be good people. I don't care if they're doctor, lawyer, candlestick maker. I want to be good people. And, you know, I never heard a single other parent say that. Never. I think the idea of being a good person, you know, in the traditional sense of not hurting other people and not, you know, I think that whole concept is just so completely gone when we think about raising children now. We think about the things they need. We think about, you know, the education that we want them to have. We think about all these other things, but we really don't think about their moral education. Am I right here?
No, I think also, yeah, this is Pinkley. I think the other thing that we touched on earlier, Justin, that you talked about was, and I don't know if these were your exact words, but this is what I was thinking, is that we have a great sense of entitlement in our society right now, as you were saying, Heather, we want things. And and because we've become so quick in our technology, we want it right now. There's no waiting period.
Yeah.
There's no... so thus I think that people, this is generalizing, but people are, I don't know, people, we don't really have an innate ability anymore. We're losing that to be able to stop and reflect, wow, this is how I'm feeling, and maybe I should think about how I want to react to that versus I'm going to react quickly. I mean, when I watch sports, and I'm not a big sports person. I don't have kids. I don't have a partner, so that's not part of my life. But when I turn on, you know, again, I don't want to overgeneralize, but it, even the athletes on the field are hurting each other. And so that seems to be the that's not something I want to watch. I mean, that takes all of the meaning behind why we have sports, and that's to teach good sportsmanship. And
well, I think that,
and lots of other different things as well. But, you know, why would I want to sit and watch, you know, a baseball player beating up another baseball player, or the coach getting involved and then the whole team is out on the field and it's utter chaos? I mean, that's sadly what people thrive off, it seems like.
So Jason, has the meaning of athletics, of sports, changed? Because used to be that you wanted your children to be in sports so they could learn leadership and teamwork,
right,
and accountability and all of those good things. And has it changed? Do we not look to sports for those things anymore?
I don't think it's changed. In fact, I feel that way about my own. By and large, I think the influence, I think what's sensationalized has changed. I think let me go back to something. I can't remember who said it, but one of you talked about how young people interpret things and their ability to interpret things. And they simply aren't prepared in middle school, in high school, to interpret things because their brain hasn't fully developed. Their psychological, social issues, the way they are has not developed. They don't have the capacity to think like an adult. So when they are inundated with all of these images and all of these from everywhere, I mean, unfortunately, I think because of the world we live in and how hard people have to work, some people are growing up watching a particular show from New Jersey on the beach, thinking that the young women on that show are what it means to be a woman, and the guys on that show is what it means to be a man. in reality, they're not getting, you know, what it means to be a man, what it means as a woman to see yourself, as a girl to see yourself with dignity and respect and worth more and worthy of somebody else's respect, worth. We're not doing a very good job. If I could generalize, and I don't like it, and I certainly don't want to come off as a, you know, morally superior, but as a society, we're not doing a very good job teaching our men, our young men, how to grow up to be men, and our young women how to see themselves with respect and dignity, worthy of the things like that from other people. And so what you're getting as they grow up, and as they enter into social clubs and things, athletic sports, you're seeing a, I don't want to say maladjusted development, but a different development that is evolving and being expressed on the field or on the court, just like an artist would express what they bring to the table on a canvas or, you know, a drawing. It's a way to express yourself, skating, whatever the activity is. But you're seeing this kind of altered development expressed on the field. And unfortunately, the negative things are sensationalized by our society.
But well, Jason, I'm going to support you on the answer, on your answer to Heather's question. I do think we do tend to look at youth sports, especially when we're talking about the non-academic teams that people participate on. Certainly, I know that my children benefited from sports culture, as all of them are leaders, all of them are outgoing, they tend to be fit, you know, they take care of their health a little more, they pay attention to that. It also kind of rounds them out as a human being. But also what you said, Jason, that just resonated really strongly with me is that the competitive piece that's done on the field or in the sports arena, whatever that is for the sport, they don't have the ability to like say, okay, now I'm off that. I'm off that field or that arena. Now I return to being my normal human self. And how do I translate those leadership skills and that physical strength into everyday life? That was a good thing, eye opener for me that you just shared, and I really appreciate that.
Well, let me touch on that because that was an educational moment for me on the football field at a junior varsity high school game. The line between reality and sort of fantasy is real blurry now because of where we are as a culture.
Uh-huh.
The line, there's so much reality TV. I don't even know what that is. Certainly not real life.
not my reality.
There's so much. The video games are just unbelievable. I can't even play them. I don't even know what to do with them. But they're so real. But it's certainly not real. I had a young man, a player, who came out of a game. You know, we sent the play into a game, and the play that we sent in wasn't the play that occurred. And we come to the sidelines, and the young man, we said, wait, what are you doing? What happened? And he said, well, that play, I changed the play. Oh. I said, you changed the play? Why? He said, well, my play was better. Really?
Oh.
And he said, well, yeah, it's on Madden, and it works every time in Madden.
Oh, my gosh.
Now Madden is a video game.
Right.
So this young man equated the video game to actual football.
And rather than listening to his leader, he made his own decision. Well,
So that is an eye-opener. Right there, if you look at the bigger picture of that, fantasy and reality are blurry because young people don't have the ability to discern the difference. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes so sense.
I knew that happened with, like, preschoolers. So many parents think that they're preschoolers. can tell the difference between, you know, what's on TV and what's real, and they don't have that brain development. I did not realize, though, that that extended into older people. And you think it's because of the culture or the media that they're surrounded by?
I think it's directly related to the amount of time you spend in a particular endeavor.
Yeah.
Someone who sits online on the internet and games for 8 hours a day, instead of interacting with human beings, instead of carrying on, you know, socially with other people, physically interacting, having conversations and carrying on a job or whatever, I absolutely think that their reality is a bit distorted psychologically.
Yeah.
It's about how you spend your time and what you're asking your brain and your emotions to process.
Yeah.
Well, Jason, this is Deborah. I thank you so much. I have to I want to thank you for being a coach. I know the important role that coaches played in my four children's lives, and I know that they have great fond memories of the sports that they did and of their coaches. So thank you for that, and I hope you continue doing it. You've got a lot of work ahead of you.
Well, one of the reasons that I wanted to come on the show, because I certainly don't desire to be the poster boy for this, but just to raise awareness.
We've got our posters all printed, Jason.
raise the awareness and actually encourage schools, high schools, school boards, state athletic associations to get in the ball game. You know, get in the game. I know it's an edgy topic. I know they're scared to death because they're not prepared to deal with it, let alone educate coaches on how to deal with it. But it's time to get in the game. You know, every school, high school athletic association across the country has a coaches education program. School districts, every school district across the country has requirements for continuing ed for coaches. Get in the ball game.
Yep.
My hope is that somebody listening has an ear to somebody of influence and can say, this is an area that we need to address. Let's get on it.
Absolutely.
And certainly there have been some things in the news recently that athletes, and I think one of the most noted ones in the last few days actually has been in Dallas, and there's been professional athletes there who have picked up on the anti-violence movement there, and they actually just, I think it was last night, Dallas Domestic Violence Shelter hosted a training camp for men to get involved in the fight against domestic violence, and it was well attended. They're going to have a whole series of these training camps for the guys that want to be involved in the anti-violence movement. So really an important issue. I thank you so much for being with us, Jason. We usually wrap up our show with a quote. Deborah, do you have a quote for us? Do you have a sportsy quote for us?
I have a sportsy quote. Joe Torre, who is famous in the sports world, he has his own foundation now, and he witnessed domestic violence growing up. So here's the quote from Mr. Joe Torre. He says, if we grow up respecting one another, we will eventually end violence. The more we talk about it, the more we'll be likely to pick up a phone and tell a relative, a teacher, or a counselor. So thank you for that, Mr. Joe Torre. And thanks for listening, and thank you, Jason, for joining us. And we are three women.
Three ways.
Three divas.
All
Join
right.
Us next week. We're going to be talking about racial disparity impacts in when it comes to domestic violence, incomes, ethnicity, that kind of thing. So join us next week. We're going to have another rockin' show. And I, again, thank Jason DeStefano for his work and for being our guest with us today. So join us next week, and have a great week, everyone.